Welcome to episode 30 of Kneel Before Odd. I'm your host, Audrey Kearns, and I hope you are swell, and that your day is a good one, or evening. And if it's not, I hope this next hour will cheer you up. And it should, because guess what? Naomi Grossman just left my house. And let me tell you something about her. She's just aces. We had a great interview. She's got a wonderful, wonderful happy energy, and it was super fun. I really enjoyed it. Naomi Grossman played Pepper on two seasons of American Horror Story. She was a fan favorite for viewers of the show, and deservedly so. She does an amazing job on it. She plays a microcephalic. I think I said that right. Microcephalic. Other people may say pinhead. She played Pepper the Pinhead. She was also a storyteller at my most recent Five Truths and a Lie show that I recorded at DragonCon 2015 over Labor Day weekend, where she told one hell of a story. And that podcast should be out soon. And you definitely need to listen to it when it comes out. That's fivetruthsandalie.com. So in this podcast, I chat with Naomi about the DragonCon show, her fans, fan art, her upbringing, her stage career, as well as her television and film career, how she ended up in Los Angeles, and the job she worked while trying to make it at this acting game. And yes, we talk about American Horror Story Asylum and American Horror Story Freak Show. It's a great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Enjoy episode 30 of Kneel Before Odd with myself, Audrey Kearns, and my lovely guest, actress and comedian Naomi Grossman.
Internet, heed this call. Open your minds and ears and prepare yourself to kneel before all.
Hello and welcome to Kneel Before Odd. I'm your host, Audrey Kearns, and this is a show where I interview geek patriots. And today, I have actress and comedian Naomi Grossman, who played Pepper on two seasons of American Horror Story. Welcome, Naomi.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for coming over to my house.
I'm thrilled to be here.
This is awesome. So, like I was telling you a little earlier, I ask all my guests what their nerd origin story is. So we're going to start with that. What's your nerd origin story?
Well, my parents raised me to be a nerd from a very young age, actually.
Good for them. Yes. Good for them, I say.
But when I say nerd, I don't mean, you know, Star Trek.
Right.
No. My folks were like uber intellectual.
Okay, so you're talking about brainy nerd.
Exactly.
Right.
So for example, television was a big no-no. Rots the brain. Which I think is ironic because
Look what you're doing now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, look at me now. So I would, you know, sneak facts of life while other kids were sneaking cigarettes.
What was your favorite thing to sneak? Facts of life? What was your favorite show to sneak?
Yeah, you know, Facts of Life, Cosby Show, Family Ties.
Right, all those Silver classic Spoons. 80s sitcoms. I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
Which is so ridiculous because they were like wonderful television. And the fact that this was, you know, the devil.
I know, that's fantastic.
It's absurd. especially given that, you know, American Horror Story really is the devil. Mm-hmm.
Now, were you in turn super like honor roll student?
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, Breakfast Club, when Anthony Michael Hall keeps a gun in his locker, like that was me.
Yeah, yeah. I was a cross between Anthony Michael Hall and Ally Sheedy. We had to write a paper about that in high school, yeah. Because I was president of the math club, just so you know, but I also wore all black all the time.
Uh-huh.
And I had no friends. I did. I had great friends. Did your parents like have you on a schedule like Naomi, time to study or?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, come home from school and my mom was a stay at home mom. Uh-huh. She would prepare me these extraordinary meals. Like my favorite snack after school was an artichoke.
That's so awesome.
You know, my mom is a pianist. My dad was an architect.
Oh, wow.
So it was just this like uber cultured home. And you know, she'd call out from the piano, you know, there's Coco Van in the fridge, like that kind of thing,
I love it.
And of course I was just like, all I wanted was like fruit roll-ups.
Yeah. But the other kids, kids
jump.
Had.
Yeah. Slim Jims. So I really kind of resented my parents for raising me so awesomely. In fact, I wished, I always remembered, I wished my mom had had a job. You know, she was always home, always cooking gourmet meals, you know. And I don't, for some reason, when I was very young in particular, I had this fantasy of her actually driving the school bus. Because it seemed like the perfect job, you know, because that was like the one time that I really disliked in my day, you know, the bus, just kind of unpleasant. Yeah. And so if she were there, it would just make it all better.
It would just make it all better. That's so sweet. My sister, at one point when she was around 30, she dyed her hair three different colors, and she has four kids, and she's very earthy, hippy dippy, you know, and brings her children up in a very free, creative household. And her oldest, Maya, at one point was upset that she didn't look like the moms who are wearing polo shirts and khaki pants.
Right.
She's like, "Why do you have to have your hair like that, Mom?" Right. It's like you always want the other side.
Exactly. No, and it was so absurd because, you know, I mean, we were fairly well off. Like, my mom didn't need to be driving a bus. Like, she was fine, like, living off of my, you know, dad's decent salary as an architect.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you an only kid?
An only child.
An only child. Yeah. And of course, you look back at it now, and it was like the best.
It was the dream. I mean, we lived in this beautiful home that my dad designed.
Oh, wow.
It was actually in Architectural Digest.
That is really
neat. Oh, but of course, I wanted to live in one of those cookie cutter subdivisions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
It's fascinating how the human brain works. Did you get any of, obviously, you're a very creative person, but any, are you a musician?
Yes and no. I did take piano for, I don't know, like 8 or 9 years. You know, I mean, you had to, like, live in our house.
Yeah.
But, you know, by comparison, I mean, my mom is a true musician, so that's why I can't actually
because your bar is really high.
Exactly.
I got it.
Yeah. But I mean, my dad, for example, was a real, like, a classical music aficionado. Like, he used to win us tickets to the Denver Symphony Orchestra every single week by just playing Name That Composer on the airwaves with the classical music DJs.
Were you cool with going to school and saying, "Hey, I went to this awesome symphony this weekend with my parents"?
No. I mean, again, I was so not cool. And that's where the nerd, that's where the nerd connection comes in. You know,
absolutely.
Like, I missed my very first date. Like, James Miller called me and asked me to Wayne's World. But I couldn't go because we had to go to see the symphony. And, you know, I mean, thank God now we have things like Facebook, and I can see, like, James Miller grew up to be like this big fat, like, plumber or something.
Yeah.
Like,
so it wasn't going to work out anyway.
But, you know, at the time, I really resented that, you know, Berlioz.
Facebook is great for that, that, you know, you can look back and say, "Oh, thank God I didn't stay there." Or,
saved.
No, that, okay, great. Okay, before we get started, I have a bunch of questions for you, but this is, because I don't know how this started. And I have been wanting to ask you, I'm going to go back 1 month to Dragon Con.
Okay.
Okay. So I write and produce a storytelling show called Five Truths and a Lie, which Naomi participated in at Dragon Con. And it was a great panel. We had Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall, Maren Dungey, Aaron Abrams, Jesse Rath, and Amber Benson. So what we do is the six storytellers tell a story based on a theme, one person's lying. And so at the end, I had to ask the audience who's lying. And there's about, 600 people there, 600 or 700 people.
Yeah.
That's what my husband said, and I didn't count. But I believe him. I believe whatever he tells me. There could have been five people there, and he told me.
Not.
So I think it happened after I announced the lie. Oh, so everyone thinks Naomi's lying or Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall's lying. And they're going back and forth. Is it Naomi? Is it Scott?
Well, they were the most outrageous stories of all.
Oh, they were. They were completely outrageous stories. And we'll have that podcast up soon. It was one of my favorite shows of all time. It was so fun. So I announced who the winner, who the liar was, which I'm not going to say because you guys have to listen to it. It wasn't Naomi. I will say it wasn't Naomi or Scott. And
which is unfortunate.
It is, and you'll have to listen to the podcast to see what she's talking about, unless you want to talk about that. So I see this, like, kind of commotion out of the corner of my eye as I'm at the podium talking to the audience. And I look over, and I see you and Scott Thompson, like, play pushing each other. and like, you know, like mouthing off to each other. And I couldn't tell. And then it took me like a long second to say, oh, this is a joke, you know, because I was like, what?
Yeah.
Next thing you know, it's like a blur. Naomi and Scott down on the floor wrestling. I think he pushed, I don't know who pushed you. It looked like he pushed you.
You pulled him down. And he was, I knew it was a bit.
Yeah. You know? And of course you got, you know, and one of the most amazing sketch comedians, improvisers live. So you knew, I bet you guys locked eyes and you And so you have 700 people up on their feet screaming, taping you guys. And then you guys got up and like straightened your ties and sat down and the bit was done. But it was a magical experience for the audience because it was one thing that they got to see that will never happen again. And it made people cry from laughter. So what the fuck happened? I was talking and I turned and you guys were wrestling on the floor.
Well, no, I mean, it was very competitive, you know, we both, it was all audience
Clapping,
reaction.
Yeah.
And, you know.
So you guys both wanted to be chosen.
Yeah, we both wanted to be chosen.
Just so you listeners know, it was very hard to choose because we went down the line of all six people and Naomi and Scott got the loudest applause and we kept going back and forth. Naomi, Scott. And it was really hard to tell.
And that's when I pulled up my fist, like as if to, you know, initiate an arm wrestle. And then we started arm wrestling.
That's what it was. Okay.
He didn't anticipate just how strong I am. And so I started to kind of take him down. And then just like you said, eyes locked. I knew he was with me. And so I took him down.
So
I admittedly, wrestling with Scott Thompson on a stage is a bucket list moment.
Come on.
And so, yeah.
And had you guys met before yet?
No.
That's so awesome.
But I've loved him forever.
Yeah. And well, I think that's also the lovely thing about being an improviser and a seasoned sketch comedian is that you know when to trust and you know when someone's there with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine if it was just some guy and you pulled him down and he's just like, oh my God, she's attacking me.
Yeah.
You know, it was beautiful. And I can't thank you enough for that moment. It was
great.
So fun.
He did admit afterwards to the fact that he's like, we should have kissed. And I said, well, we still can.
Well, then you guys posted.
And we kissed the next day.
And that's also a consummate professional. It's like you constantly think, what we should have kissed. Darn it. How many cons have you been to?
God. I don't know in my life, like in the last 3 years since I've been sort of riding this wave.
Yeah.
I've done 32 appearances this year.
32?
Yeah, and it's only September.
My goodness. Now, so this will be an interesting question because I've been to a lot of cons. I haven't been to 32 different ones. I've been 32 times, but usually to the same cons. My favorite all-time convention is Dragon Con.
Yes.
I go there every year. And I know it was your first Dragon Con. So what did you think?
Oh, man. Yeah, no, you prepared me.
Yeah.
I sent you
an email to let you know. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like
No, I would concur with that. By far the best.
Yeah.
It just in terms of you know, just experience.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it depends on what you're going for. Like, if you're going to network, you know, I don't think there's anything better than San Diego.
Right.
If you want to make money, I think, you know, there's better out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as far as just
a five-day party?
Yeah.
Just a long 5-day party.
I mean, I admit I am. I actually am a burner.
Uh-huh.
And so...
Yeah, you told me that. So,
like,
yeah.
There was a little part of me that was sort of resentful that I wasn't, you know, 5-day partying.
And Burning Man instead.
But, you know, this was just different.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's shrooms to this acid. Like, they're just sort of different trees in the forest.
Yeah, everyone's, you know, and everyone's letting their freak flag fly at both of them. Everybody is, like, totally open. And I think Dragon Con helps that because it's all in a very small space where, like, San Diego, you're walking all over the place Dragon Con is really confined. And I basically had to shut my website down that week because my main writer is a burner. And he's just like, you know, and he's like, I'm off the grid because they go early.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and I was at Dragon Con and my other main writer, she goes to something up in Seattle every Labor Day. So everybody was at their, I guess, their rejuvenation places that they do. And he's promised to come to Dragon Con 1 year if I go to Burning Man 1 year.
That's,
and I think that we'll
fair.
Both enjoy it, but we'll probably want to go back to, like you're saying.
Your respective
festival. Yeah, you're going to have a great time, but there's a place where you feel more home. What's your, what's the one thing you love doing at conventions? Do you enjoy meeting guests?
I do.
I mean, fans?
I really do.
Yeah?
I mean, I I'm here because of them.
Yes.
I mean, truly. Like, yes. I wouldn't have been back for that second season of American Horror Story as the same character, you know, mm-hmm. breaking all the rules, if it weren't for the fan support.
They just really loved Pepper.
I love meeting them.
That's great.
And yeah, especially, like, I just have the most wonderful fans of all. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can tell the difference when they walk through the door. There's the type that's beelining it for, you know, Robert Englund and, you know.
Yeah. Everybody's got their person.
And then there's the people that come for me, and they're a very special type.
Yeah. And there's a lot of those folks. And that, I think that was the success of my storytelling show that year, is I was able to get 6 storytellers from different parts of nerddom or, mm-hmm. or genre television and everything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you had so many fans there that night to hear your story, you know, and
I wonder if they're still fans.
Your story was the best. You know, because they were all tweeting about it ahead of time. They were tweeting about it after, aww. You know, it was great. So you were born in Colorado, is that correct? Right? Mm-hmm. And where in Colorado?
Denver area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you stayed there for how long?
I was there until high school. And then I was an exchange student in Argentina.
For 1 year?
For a year.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And did you speak Spanish?
I did.
Already?
Or else. Oh, before. Yeah. I mean, I joke. Like, of course, I was president of the Spanish club.
Yes.
But, I mean, I was president of every club. So.
Yeah. I totally
So, you know, I got there. Yeah. And, of course, I was just like, Machu Picchu. Yeah. You know, that was a joke. For the radio listeners, I'm extending my hand as if I'm saying, nice to meet you. Oh, well. When you have to explain it, it doesn't. Oh, well. Point is, I didn't actually know Spanish. You know what I mean? Like, yes, I was like, got a 5 on the AP Spanish, but by actual, like,
it's a totally different thing than actually being immersed in it.
Right.
How long did it take you to where you didn't have to think before you speak when you were in Argentina?
Oh, I never think before I speak, ever.
No, I mean, like,
but no, I know what you mean. And I still just, you know, I think the actress in me really helped me in that regard. Right. Like, I was just always just out there. I didn't care how I sounded, and that really helped me.
Yeah. So there's this fearlessness.
Absolutely.
Yeah. See, I would have been in my head. I'm a little opposite of that. Oh. So that's great. That's great. So you had this fearlessness.
Yeah.
And then would people tell you, okay, you said that wrong? Were they really?
Oh,
cool?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. But you know, I would say, like, you could mark the progress. Like, you know, within 3 months, I was definitely much better. And then 6 months, that much better. And 9 months, I'm dreaming. Uh-huh. And a year, well, actually, I'll tell another secret.
Tell a secret, please.
Well, you know, my Spanish has actually helped me a lot as an actress, actually. Mm-hmm. I've never gotten any roles as a Spanish speaker because Hollywood's so racist. You know, they don't possibly believe that I can speak Spanish, but that's okay. We all have our ding-a-ling actor side jobs. Uh-huh. And I was a Spanish teacher.
Okay.
And I actually strolled into, I'll keep the school a secret, but I basically told them that I was a native speaker to get the job, and not only did I get it, I stayed there for 7 years.
Wow.
I was like, I had seniority, and nobody ever thought twice about it.
Now, what's it like, you know, when you look at English-speaking countries, mm-hmm. even within the United States, there's so many regional dialects, and between English countries, there's different dialects. Since Argentina, I would say that you favor that dialect, since that's where you really...
Yeah, no, I'm not good at doing other accents.
So, yeah. But do people look at you, say in Southern California, where there's a lot of different dialects, do people kind of do a double take when you're speaking Spanish, or do they know right away that's Argentina?
Well, it's interesting. Yes, my Spanish is very Argentine.
Yeah.
And even then, what's funny is, because I was there while I was in high school, my Spanish is very... high school Argentine 1997.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right,
so
right.
Whatever kids, you know, gag me with a spoon or whatever, like the equivalent saying now.
Yeah.
So people always remark, like, oh, you sound so like you're 20 or not even, barely.
That's fantastic.
My Spanish is very Argentine. But what's funny is, like I said, people kind of they listen with their eyes. So uh-huh. I'll pull up to, let's say, valet parking somewhere, uh-huh. right? And the invariably they're Mexican uh-huh. living here in Southern California. Uh-huh. And I'll say to them in completely Spanish, you know, fluent Spanish, like, aquí están mis llaves, here are my keys. Uh-huh. And they, like, it's, I'm fluent, okay?
Yeah.
Like.
They're like, oh, okay.
And they literally are like, okay, thank you. And I'm like, really?
You could have said gracias.
Like, yeah, you could have said gracias. It's interesting. Yeah. Like, they, it just, it blows their mind.
Yeah. That this have you ever girl, you know? Caught people talking about you because they assumed you were only English speaking? I'm always wondering because I'm so tall, people point at my feet and always say something and I know they're talking
like they
about me.
Like, they won't hear you because you won't hear them because you're so high up?
I wish. No, I won't understand them because they're speaking a different language.
Oh.
Like, I never get pedicures because I've...
Oh, I see what you know, mean. Yeah, like Vietnamese yeah. would never imagine that
you... I've had people point at my feet and, like, totally laugh while I'm getting a pedicure. And I'm just like, I want to cry.
Like, I'm right here.
I can't help it that I'm a big girl. Oh. So you've never caught anyone, like, talking about you in Spanish? Oh,
no.
Or is that the chick from American Horror Story?
Oh, I have gotten that.
In Spanish?
I have gotten, oh, you know, she's actually really pretty. And I'm like, I'm right here.
Well, I'm pretty right now. What would make me?
I've also had, like, handlers, like, specifically, like, bald, unattractive male handlers who, like, pass off as if they're me when I'm in the restroom. But that's another story. Yeah, no, I mean, at least they're like, oh, she's actually really pretty, as opposed to, isn't she?
Yeah, exactly, because that would suck. So let's go back to Colorado. Mm. I did read that you started doing plays at a young age. Is that true?
Yes, that's true.
How old were you when you did your first play?
Well, we went to see theater, of course.
Yes.
And, you know, I was probably like... five, uh-huh. you know, singing and dancing in the aisles of the you know, opera and ballet yeah. and everything. Like, you couldn't contain me. Uh-huh. But I was, I actually did, like, my first kid skits,
yeah.
which was the children's theater company in uh-huh. Denver, Colorado. Probably, like, 8 or 9.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And at 8 or 9, because I'm sure mm-hmm. your attitude has changed over the years, 8 or 9, what was it that you loved at that moment of being on stage? Maybe it hasn't changed. Maybe
it has still, not changed. Okay, so I just like attention.
So you love the people having an audience, as they're a trapped audience.
Yes.
And then they clap and scream for you.
Yes.
And it was lovely.
I even remember feeling it when I was up on stage at your show.
Yeah.
Thinking, yeah. this is awesome.
Yes.
Like, these people have to listen to me.
It's a storytelling show. They have no choice.
Yeah. I mean, granted, it's only 6 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, but for those 6 minutes, you're mine.
Yeah. You'll have to come back and do the one we do here, because then it's like 8 to 12 minutes.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's just a Dragon Con. They're just like on you. They're just like you in and out. And then we had to clear out the room because the BDSM party was coming in after us.
Of course.
And that's why there are people with, like, ball gags waiting.
Oh, my God.
When we left the room.
No, admittedly, I was much more afraid about not making time than I was about saying a horribly offensive story, which is what I really needed to be concerned about. But
well, that's the great thing about the show we do here, so that nobody's really... You have a general area. So mm-hmm. yeah, I always, whenever I've told a story at the place where it's like, you got 5 minutes, your head can't help but to be, you know, a little timer,
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know, getting in the way of the story. So you love the attention.
I do.
And did you keep going in children's theater?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this little theater or company, rather, we would perform every Saturday morning at the Comedy Works in downtown Denver, which was, you know, like a legitimate comedy club. Uh-huh. So, you know, we felt very important.
Yeah.
You know, the bar there. And, you know, it was... we did that, and then they also had a little agency affiliated with them. And so during the week, we go out to, you know, go to auditions
really?
And whatnot. And I do, you know, regional commercials, and I did an episode of Father Dally Mysteries. And,
you did? You know, just, when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I remember
so
that.
So, like, just like what anything and everything that came through Colorado, which wasn't much, but, you know, what there was, I did.
How fun. And then were you in drama club in high school?
Oh, of course.
All that kind of
although
stuff?
I was a little too cool for, I mean, I was.
Well, because you have been doing theater.
I've been
so
doing
long.
Professional theater.
And now you guys are just, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I totally understand that.
But I still had to be president of it. Just, you know, I just didn't have to like it.
Did your, parents love that you are doing it because, you know, being, you know, your mother being a musician and your dad being a fan of the arts and everything?
No, I think, I mean, I put so much pressure on myself. Like, I, for some reason, I felt I had to be present at all these things. And they never imposed that on me. I mean, they wanted me to be great at whatever I did.
Is that a competitive streak in you?
Yes, it is.
Or were you thinking ahead? Because when I was president of everything, it was me and my friend Heidi. We got together and we looked at the clubs our junior year and said, okay, you, I'm going to be president of that one. You can have that one. And we'd be the vice president of the other, you know.
Oh, that's nice.
So we'd be president. So we teamed up and we got everything that we wanted, but we were doing it for college, to get for our college resumes.
I didn't even think about college. I mean, I knew where I wanted to go and I went there. I applied early decision.
Where'd you
to
go?
Northwestern.
Oh, that's Chicago, right?
Although I applied from Argentina. Again, you got to remember.
What year? What school year? Junior?
I was a senior in Argentina.
Oh, so you did your senior year somewhere else.
So I ditched, like, I basically like conquered high school in those 3 years and was then like, I'm out of here. Like, I'm bored of you people. I'm your president of everything and I'm done. Oh my God. If people listen to this from my high school, they'll be like, you're such a jerk. Oh, well. You know, they probably know.
Tell us everything, Naomi.
Yeah. No, but, yeah, so I just, you know, I was out of there. And then in high school, then rather senior year in Argentina, then that's when it, things got interesting. Because that was the first time I ever really kind of let my hair down. You know what I mean? Because I was so uptight through my entire adolescence. You know, I finally like drank alcohol and, you know, discovered boys and did all those normal things that high schoolers do. And I had, you know, I was too busy. So, you know, and I applied early decision, which, you know, that was non-negotiable for my parents, even though they were thousands of miles away. But even then I remember like faxing off my, my, application and just kind of hoping it got there. My parents were like, well, did you send? I'm like, I think so. I mean, I didn't get the receipt from telecom, but
I think I sent it. Did you choose Northwestern or did your parents?
I did. Yeah. And again, for the greatest reason, because it was like number one on the U.S. News and World Report for, you know,
so you're like, theater. I'm going to go to the number one.
That's where I go.
And was it a great theater program?
It was. It was. My only regret was not ever really knowing winter before that. I mean,
wait. Are you,
well, I mean, no, you're right. Okay, Denver, yes, there's winter.
Is it a different kind
but
of winter?
It's different.
Like, what's the difference? Because I grew up in Florida, so I don't understand winter.
Okay, well, there's a huge difference, and that is in Colorado, you can be wearing a bathing suit and ski at the, you know what I mean? It can be 50 degrees, and you're out in the snow, like, you know, in beautiful powder.
It's not harsh, this harsh thing.
In Chicago, it's like 9 months of doom and gloom. You know,
that, I hear the chill off the lake is just like ridiculous.
I got frostbite on my butt.
Really?
Yes, I did. Freshman year.
Did you have to buy like a whole...
A coat that covered my butt after that.
Is that really the reason why?
No, that's really the reason why.
You didn't
why.
Go into the lake naked?
No, it wasn't anything. It was literally like I was just wearing a, you know, a waist-length parka.
Yeah.
Like I needed a full, like one to your ankle.
God, I don't think I could do those kind of winters. I really, really, really don't. So after Northwestern, did you stay in the area? Because there's a lot of theater in Chicago.
And again, the only reason was the weather.
So you came out to LA?
Yeah. Immediately.
Yeah. And what's the first thing you did?
Broke up with my boyfriend. Or did maybe you, he broke up with me.
Did you guys move together?
No.
Okay.
He was my RA.
Oh my goodness. Scandalous.
So wild. yeah. He had graduated 2 years ahead of me and he was a PA at Friends, which you remember was like the really hot show at the time. Yes. And you know, I moved out here and we probably needed to have broken up 2 years prior when he graduated and left.
Right, right.
But, you know, holding on.
Yeah. And then you're here and your guys realize you're like, oh, okay, no.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, once again, I think he saved me. I think I was able to sort of pave my own way here because of that.
Yeah.
But at the time it was kind of rough.
I can imagine.
You know, I didn't have anything. I didn't have really a clique of friends or a job or a place to live or any money or...
What was your first job to pay rent?
I waited tables, as everyone does.
I waited tables, yes.
Like, everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I did, like, 3 days at the Cheesecake Factory, and then I was like, I'm not doing white jeans. I did the Hard Rock. I worked at the Hard Rock Cafe because I liked that costume.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the outfits.
Yeah, of course. You're a theater right. kid.
Oh, I was a hostess at a fancy little restaurant in Rodeo Drive where I had a steamy little romance with the chef.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, that was exciting.
That's good. What was the first place where you were like, okay, well, I got it. How do I break into it here? Were you auditioning for plays? Did you start taking classes?
No.
You just worked for a while.
I did some plays. Yeah. Yes, I worked with the Factory Theater, which is they were actually some folks I knew back in Chicago, and then they were here. Yeah. And I got involved with Improv Olympic and then later the Groundlings. Mm-hmm. But really, I think I spent those first 2 years just trying to get my find my way.
Yeah.
And
LA is a hard town to get started in. I mean, I came here with my husband when we were 30, and, you know, we still weighed the tables and worked at the theme parks because we had a bunch of connections at the theme park so we could get hosting jobs there and stuff like that. But we were still working 3 jobs each.
Of course.
I mean, the cost of living is so much different. And it's just hard
to get and between all those waiting table jobs, I was a Red Bull girl. I used to drive that little car with the can until I drove it into the Beverly Center.
How'd you do that? What happened?
I just, you know, was going shopping on the clock and forgot.
You were going shopping on the clock.
Oh my God. Are you kidding? Like, we would.
Did you not hit a clearance?
I forgot.
Something?
Like, I was just shopping. Like, I wasn't, it didn't even occur to me that I was actually working.
That's
like,
fantastic.
Driving a car with, like, a huge car with a can on the top.
Yeah.
Like, we were the worst.
Was that the job, is just to drive around town so people see the car?
Well, technically, we were supposed to be in search of people in need of energy. And we would, you know, shower
Stop
them with
and
Red Bulls.
Say, give, have some Red Bulls.
So we'd go, you know, we were to go around to parks and find groups of boys playing soccer and, you know, hand off some Red Bulls. But I mean, the reality of it was we all had auditions. We all had, improv class.
Story.
And we would just, you know, go about our lives in the Red Bull truck.
So you go, okay, you gave some Red Bull to the boys playing basketball at the park.
And then
my audition's in 20 minutes.
Right.
And then you go run to your audition and then you go back to it.
Yeah,
That's I love it. I love it. That is very
LA. But I was actually one of the good ones. Like, there were other girls that would literally like just, I shouldn't, now I'm outing them. I'm alienating. I will have
people
zero
come to
friends
this
by the end of this podcast.
To lose all their friends.
I was actually one of the good ones, but I did get fired after 2 years.
After the car incident?
I mean, it was about time.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I think they were paying us like $10 an hour. Like, you get what you pay for.
Exactly. That's so very true. When did you start doing, I read that you did a couple solo shows here.
Right. Well, okay. So I think within about 2 years of all this just madness, I started to kind of think, I want to be an actress, but I'm driving around in this ridiculous car and I'm covered in, you know, other people's ketchup. Like, I need to act, like, what, you know?
Yeah.
And really, my process up until that point was just, you know, going to and from the post office with headshots and resumes and get off to casting. Mm-hmm. You know, putting basically all of my fate in the hands of complete strangers.
Right.
And then I just, I started to realize, like, if I want to act, I need to act, like, not go to the post office. So that's when I got hooked up with a director by the name of Rich Imbardo. Uh-huh. And he and I collaborated on a couple one-woman shows. And that sort of ignited something in me.
That's good.
From that moment on, I was never idle again. I never stopped creating. You know, I constantly had something percolating.
And it's been just up ever since.
Yeah.
That's great. It's so easy when you move out here, too, to get, you know, you get your copy of Backstage, if you're an actor, for those listening, you get your copy of Backstage West, you look back, you look at all the castings, you put all your headshots in the envelope, and like you're saying, you're just sending them out into the ether, and because it's taking time, and you feel like you're doing something. You feel like you're doing something, but
you're
not until you do, like I did a solo show, too.
Yeah.
It was totally life-changing for me. I was like, whoa, I forgot, because it was almost like I had a 10-year hiatus from acting, and I did the show again. I was like, whoa, I forgot about that.
That's right.
Awesome. Now, your second one, the Carnival Knowledge one, you went to Edinburgh Fringe,
yes.
which I've done plenty of Fringe shows, never been. That's like the mother of all Fringe festivals. Yeah. So how was that?
I mean, that's the Dragon Con of all, you know what I mean? It's as an actor or, you know, artist, it's the Kilimanjaro. You've got to climb it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, I mean, it truly separates the men from the boys. After 30 days of climbing uphill both ways in the pouring rain at 11 p.m. With a duffel full of dildos to an audience of maybe three. Maybe 300.
You don't know. Every show's different.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, if you still want to do it, like, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
But I cried when I left, you know, because it was just, it was another one of those.
It's a bucket list moment.
Bucket list.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Now, when I was reading your bio, it was just, so you did that show here in LA too. You extended twice, sold out. You go to Edinburgh, great reviews there. You go to the West End, do well there, and then you do off Broadway. And in that one paragraph, it makes it sound it's awesome. It's amazing. I'm jealous, and I think that's awesome. But it makes it sound like it was a whirlwind. Was it, or was it over a long period of time?
Yes and no. I mean, it was over a. All of that was over the period of about 2 years.
So that's a lot in 2 years.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
But again, what's really crazy about all that is, so, you know, I was feeling like an actor.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? And so that's, I mean, that's the goal.
Yeah.
You know, I still have my day job, but at the same time, I mean, I was fulfilled creatively.
Yeah.
And that was the point. Like, making it, quote unquote, like, you know, traditionally, like, you know, being on red carpets and your face in the magazines, that didn't matter so much as just feeling fulfilled.
Yeah.
But again, I wasn't getting that, you know, commercial, mainstream, you know, it was like, geez, Hollywood, like, what the heck? What's it going to take?
So, you know? So what happened then? What happened? So, how did American Horror Story come back? Was there a road to American Horror Story, or did you just audition for that and you got it?
I just auditioned for it and I got it.
Yeah.
But I do believe that all of this indirectly opened those doors.
Absolutely. Everything leads.
Yeah.
Everything in your past leads to the moment you are.
Right.
At that moment, you know.
So, I don't know if anyone from the IRS is listening, but, I have
so many IRS fans.
Well,
auditors.
I mean, I'm being audited actually for that year in Edinburgh, which is absurd. Like, they're trying to make it out like it was just some Scottish vacation.
And you were working.
But I was working my ass off.
Yeah.
Beep. As it turns out, you know, now I'm able to say, okay, look at my earnings now that I'm actually able to support myself just as an actress. And, you know, the fact is I was establishing my business.
Yeah.
You know, all businesses require some startup costs.
Right.
And that's that. So, I mean, there was no question that, I had so much, you know, confidence. And like, when I walked into rooms after those solo shows, like, of course I can handle these sides.
Yeah.
I can pull off my own one woman show that I wrote and produced and directed, designed. You know what I mean? You know, your silly little one liner.
Yeah,
of course I can handle profiles. You know, if anything, it kind of made me resent the auditions I would get in Los Angeles because they're absurd. You know,
Was there a difference between going back to the theater? Was there a big difference between a New York audience and a London audience?
Fringe audiences
have always been my favorite. They're always very receptive, you know, but those are like, oh, the West End, it sounds so amazing. And
you'd think so. Yeah. That New York audience would be very, you know, snooty and difficult. You know. No, really. I mean, I did have to cater some of my stuff. Like, there were some jokes that weren't going to go.
Yeah.
You know, nobody knows Trader Joe's in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
But, no, that was what was really beautiful about it is that I realized, like, my humor is pretty universal.
Mm-hmm. Before you got American Horror Story, I also read that you, because I do research.
Yes, and I notice.
Everybody I interview. Yeah. It's my nerdiness. So you took a break from acting.
A break. I mean, yes.
I'm saying what it said is you took a break and went to teach Spanish for a while.
Exactly.
Right.
And that was, and again, when I say break, I just mean I had been all acting all the time since I was, what did we establish, like 8 or 9?
Yeah.
Like I hadn't stopped thinking about my acting career since I was, you know, being denied Wayne's World. And so for me, you know, it was my one time to kind of go, okay, you know what? Maybe I'm not good at this. Maybe this is not meant to be. So like look around, what else is there?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think I took a break kind of just emotionally, like basically a year of just not doing anything creative. Uh-huh. You know, I'd gone from being at the Groundlings where I was writing 6 and 7 sketches a week, mm-hmm. and then, you know, and putting them up and finding wigs and getting them off book and to all of a sudden like nothing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a break.
That is a break.
But it only lasted like a year or so. I realized like I'm really not good at this. Like if I wasn't good at acting, I'm really, really bad at not acting. And it was just clear. Like I was just so unhappy.
Well, I mean, if you look at where you are now, I mean, it must have been something you had to go through to get back to it.
Yeah.
And so how did you get back in it?
Get back. Well, I kind of thought back and when was I happy? Mm-hmm. And it was when I was creating my own material and on stage. And I think I'd, you know, the Groundlings, the best of times, the worst of times. I had it in my head, like, you know, this is where you go and Lorne Michaels finds you and you go to SNL.
Right.
And the way, the fact that it didn't just happen like that.
Yeah.
I was flummoxed.
Yeah.
Like, what?
There is no, in your mind, there is no reason that you wouldn't go and become a main company member and then go to SNL.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I know so many folks in Sunday Company that didn't make it. And you, when I find out that they didn't, what?
Well, and it's always, no offense, again, now I alienate the Groundlings, but listening, but they're usually the most hilarious ones of all. Mm-hmm. Like my friends that didn't even get past like intermediate, they're the ones with their own shows, you know? Yeah.
I didn't go back after intermediate because I didn't pass intermediate. And I've got friends who are in the Groundlings, so I don't know if I'm going to get them mad. But I didn't go back just because of what was said to me. I knew that most people had to take intermediate over again. And it was just, I was told, God, you're really funny and you're very smart. You have, you're so smart. I don't know. You're so smart that I think maybe you're more of a UCB person than a Groundlings person. You know, we need more Robert De Niro's, not Laura Linney's. I think that's what he said. I think this is Laura. And I looked at this person and I was like, I don't know what that means.
Right.
And he was kind of like, oh, I have to explain. Yeah, you do need to explain that.
That's absurd.
And it was like, you know, I don't mind taking the class again, but no, not, you know what? I'm 35. I don't need to.
Of course.
To do that. And what's interesting is most of the teachers at the Groundlings are people that didn't make it into the main company.
Yes, they're my friends.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, I'm like one of the few that I know that hasn't been asked to teach.
Yeah, yeah. And they're great teachers. Well, except
Well, if it makes you feel any better, not that you're really, you don't seem like you're really very upset about it.
No, but no.
It was something I did get to say.
I didn't have a track in mind. It was something I did sketch comedy for a very long time. I don't consider myself a good improviser because I'm very in my head about things. And so I really was taking the classes just to see if I could get beyond that.
Which is great.
Yeah.
But one of the greatest improvisers of all time and radio man, Adam Carolla, also didn't get past intermediate. And I also did his show. And oh my God, like I couldn't get a word in edgewise. He's so hilarious.
Yeah. He's a funny guy. He really is.
So there you go.
Yeah. You never know. Yeah. So how'd you get back in? Back to that question. How'd you get back into acting?
So that's why I decided like when was I happiest? When I was writing and creating my own solo shows specifically, only cause that's a medium I really enjoy. You know, I have complete control in that case. You know, I'm
right.
I've toyed with the idea of, you know, writing a pilot or writing a movie, but then you're pretty much at the mercy of studios saying yes. And, you know, a solo show is something that I can do all by myself.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, that's the irony, is it's not truly a one-woman show. I had, you know, I wouldn't do anything without Rich Imbardo, my director. And, you know, I'm a huge team of great,
wonderful creatives. Folks that helped you out. Yeah.
So that's when I wrote Carnival Knowledge. That's okay. Solo show.
Okay. So the second solo.
Yeah.
Okay. So that came after the but again, 1 year,
you know,
break.
I had been sort of trying to fit myself in this little box of 2 to 3 minute sketches. And I realized, I can do a whole hour.
A whole hour.
All by myself.
All you. Yep. That's fantastic.
Eyes on me.
So how long after Carnival Knowledge, which was my husband's sketch group in college back in 1990,
Wow. Well, it's a good name.
It's a great name. Mm-hmm. And yours was Carnival Knowledge,
Love, Lust, and Other Human Oddities.
Yeah, it's a great title. Mm-hmm. That's a great title. How long after that was done did you get American Horror Story?
I did it in the summer of 2011 in New York, and then the spring of 2012 is when I got the call from American Horror Story.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what was the audition process?
Oh, it was fascinating. Yeah. The breakdown, which is, of course, what they send to the agents and managers that kind of let them know
what the character is.
Exactly. And, was 4 to 5 feet tall, possibly malformed, childlike.
Okay.
So... you know, I can only, there's only so much I can do with that. Yeah. I mean, obviously I am petite, so I got that going for me.
Right.
But you know, I can't do malformed.
Yeah.
Like you can't act malformed.
Yeah.
And you know, childlike. Okay. So I knew not to wear some like push up bra and booty shorts. But, you know, so I showed up at the audition. They had me prepare a monologue of Jessica Lange's from season one.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I got the rundown from a friend who watches a bunch of TV as to what season one was about.
Right.
I hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
And, of course, that didn't help me.
Because it's an anthology show.
Nothing to do with each other. Yeah. And they also gave me a ball, and they asked me to try to get them to play with them.
Oh, interesting.
So
now, isn't that her first line?
Right.
Yeah.
So in retrospect, now we understand what that's about.
Yeah.
Like they wanted to see that I could go from real childlike, you know, play with me to the later, you know, alien abducted evolved Pepper who's, you know, monologuing. So they just wanted to see that I had that range.
So that was actually one of my questions for you. So they knew already what your arc was going to be in the show. They had the whole season planned out and everything.
Mm-hmm.
When you got the part, did you know?
Not at all.
They just give you per week, you find out what you're doing.
Right.
Wow,
right.
That's fascinating.
So, and even then, you know, there was nothing in that breakdown about Pinhead or microcephalic or anything like that. Childlike. That's as close as I got.
So you didn't find out about that until after you got the role.
Right. And I got the role. Well, first, actually, the callback was a meeting with makeup. And they took a bunch of pictures of me, which they manipulated to see what I would look like as that character.
Yeah.
So, and they did it with a few actresses. And like, apparently, the bridge of my nose looked best, which is awesome because now I can drive away from auditions. And instead of beating myself up in the car, as one does, I can say, you know, if my nose bridge is best, it'll be.
Yeah.
Then, you know, we'd had a bunch of makeup tests. And, you know, when I looked at in the mirror the first time, what is this?
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, they basically said, well, you're going to look like this, which means you might want to act like that. And then, of course, they introduced me to this character, Schlitzy, from Todd Browning's movie Freaks.
Yes.
So
yes.
That was my homework to basically
so that was your
nail
research.
This character. Yeah.
And, did you do a lot of research or did you get it right away? Okay,
I did. I mean, I watched him like a hawk and you know, I created my own little backstory for her. But of course it wasn't the actual backstory. I didn't actually find out the actual backstory until 3 years later.
Yeah.
On a freak show.
Yeah.
At 10 episodes in, no less. So you just kind of have to make certain creative leaps and hope they work.
What was it like to, show up on set knowing that they were iconic actors that were going to be there.
Yeah.
Was your heart just going crazy?
Racing.
Yeah.
I mean, again, like in a way, you know, I prepared. I'd done my, not just prepared for Pepper, but, you know, like I said, I'd carried my own one-woman shows.
You're not green going into this.
No, yeah. I mean, I'm like beyond ready for this.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, it's also like kind of one of my first big gigs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the majority of my on-camera experience had been me and, you know, a friend's camera on my YouTube channel. Uh-huh.
Wow.
So, yeah, no, it was pretty intense.
I can only imagine. But, What was it like working with like Jessica Lange and James Cromwell? And
yeah,
stuff? It's just.
I mean, they're so giving.
Yeah.
I mean, it was obviously Jessica Lange is such a presence. You know, it's intimidating. You know, when she walks on set, everybody sets up a little straighter.
Huh.
But you know, I came to really know her and James Cromwell too. I'll never forget when we had that fight scene at the end there. He I remember at one point he gave me a suggestion. He said, you know, if you turn your head like this, you'll get more camera time. And I remember thinking, wow, you know, camera time for me is not camera time for him. Uh-huh. Like, wow,
nice thing to give me.
I mean, not only and was I'll, he
also it's advice that you can carry with you forever.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, here he is, best supporting actor.
Yeah.
He's also the most supportive actor.
That's so fantastic.
I mean, it was so lovely.
That is amazing. So what was more exciting for you? Okay. So Pepper has this amazing arc in season mm-hmm. 2, you know, going from, like you said, childlike, mm-hmm. you know, malformed, you know, she's got mental, how would you say it? She has not progressed mentally like other people would, to the end where she's abducted by aliens and they make her smart. And so mm-hmm. that's basically what happens. What was more fun for you? The fact that you were abducted by aliens or that you got to become smart?
I mean,
got to, and that's great grammar.
Early.
You got to become smart.
Such a nerd.
Thank
Such
you.
A nerd. Early Pepper was definitely the most fun, like hands down.
Yeah.
And even the crew would say it. You know, I remember when I became Smart Pepper, they were like, you're not as fun as you were. And it's true. I would have the most fun on set because, you know, I only had like a syllable an episode.
Right, right.
So I was able to just sort of play.
Yeah.
And I could justify it because, you know, I was in character.
Uh-huh. You know, that brings me to a point. So you only maybe have one syllable an episode, but you are constantly in the background in scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to be, I mean, it's very challenging as an actor. You know, how do you make it, you know, you have to make yourself seen, but you have to make sure that you're part, you know, that you're not interfering with. I think that's why people love Pepper so much. That's why they got to know them. It's because you really got to see her soul throughout all these scenes where she wasn't even front and center.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I first got the role, I pretty much assumed she was some glorified extra. Because, you know, you look at list.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's major stars are like tiny guest stars. So why would they entrust me, old me, and, you know, with anything significant? And she kind of was. I mean, I shouldn't say glorified extra, but you know what she was. She was kind of in the background.
Yeah.
But there's no small parts, only small
actors. And obviously what you did had such an effect on the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were saying earlier that brought you back to season 4.
Right.
I mean, it really, I remember my husband and I, because Asylum is my favorite of the
mm-hmm.
four.
Mm-hmm.
Of the four. I don't know if it's because I was raised Catholic
or
something. And so there's all this stuff is going, yeah, that is fucked up. That's so true. I know. You know, so when did you find out that you were going to be on season 4? Was it a total shock and surprise or did you know it was in the works?
I mean, everything is a shock and surprise with that show. I mean, again, just to take you through it. I mean, when we were doing the first couple episodes of Asylum, and I remember once getting the note from the director, you know, you can be even more, I'm doing it right now, difficult, you know, whatever that word is when you can't be understood.
Now I can't think of it now because we've both been put on the spot.
You know, instead of play with me, it can be, you know, whatever that word is. He said, because that way, when you come back all fixed, it will be that much greater a disparity between the two. And I remember thinking, what? You know, I hadn't heard anything about this. What do you mean fixed? What do you mean come back?
That was the first time you heard anything about it?
Nothing. Nothing. You know, all I knew is I had this little character who had, like, you know, I think it was like a guaranteed 3 episodes. Wow. And I'd already worked all 3 episodes. So for all I knew, I, you know, I'd never work again. At least not for them. And so then when Pepper went pee, if as you recall, that's when she got abducted.
Yeah.
I was gone for, like, I don't know, 5 episodes.
Right.
You know, kicking it with the aliens. But I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so all I knew is production said, don't cut your hair. That's all I knew. And so then the show started airing. And, and you know, people are asking me, so wait, what happened to Pepper? And I'm like, I honestly don't even know.
That's fantastic.
And it wasn't until then, like maybe a week before we came back, I shot the, you know, evolved alien abducted Pepper that I had to prepare for that. So, you know, I had maybe a month to live with, you know, Schlitzy.
Yeah.
The playful microcephalic Pepper, but then maybe only 5 days or so to nail the, you know, smart Pepper. And even then, I remember sitting in the makeup chair and basically asking the makeup, because they were then the mouthpiece to Ryan, say, you know, so, and they're basically like texting this as they go. So no gestures, no posture, no voice, no, like, I'm just making sure.
Yeah.
You know? And he's answering, nope, straight Pepper.
Yeah, because I'm sure that all that makeup and costume must have helped you get into the role. And now you're doing something completely different in that makeup and costume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a challenge, actually. Like, the early Pepper
How fun
was,
for you. That must have been just a blast.
But the early Pepper was kind of not easy, but I'd gotten so good at that, or used to it, that then for me to just be sort of straight talking was tricky. Yeah. But then, to answer your question, how much time did I have to prepare? I want to say that then for season 4, I think they told me in like March that I'd be coming back. And then there was rumor around May that I'd be coming back as Pepper. And then I think when they started negotiating my contract, that's when it was like, oh, actually, we don't know if it's Pepper. And I'm sure that was just so that, you know, I didn't have the same.
Right.
I'd have obviously better negotiating power if I'm clearly the only one that can play this role.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Hollywood lawyers.
Oh, games you play. But it was then we started in July. But even then, once again, I'm in the makeup trailer and there's Ryan. And he even asked me, so are you Pepper or? And I was like,
aren't you
dude, you decide. Right. And you know, here they're coming at me with some shears, like, let's decide this now.
Yeah.
You know, but even then they actually referred to us as the humorous pinheads and not as Salty and Pepper for quite a while, actually, several episodes.
Does that mean that they did not know that they were going to be playing out your whole origin story over the season?
I think they did because I don't know. But I think that they are, I mean, obviously, it was a kind of a risk to bring me back. Like, it was an interesting thing to do, as they, you know, had alluded. But I think that they knew that there was a chance that they might be misconstrued as no longer a miniseries, like that this would change everything.
Okay.
And maybe that's why they were being really kind of cautious about all that.
Right.
And then when it did come out that I was you know, at least it said Pepper on the call sheet, and then that got leaked. I still don't know where, when it came out that yes, Naomi Grossman's back as Pepper, there was no issue. I mean, it was, if anything, it worked out.
Oh,
you know, people were psyched.
I think that kept a lot of people. It gave people like some kind of grounding anchor in the show. You know, it's Pepper, and then the moment watching the show when you realize, oh wait. this takes place in a different time period. Oh, wait, this is before the asylum. Oh, wait.
Right.
What made her go to the asylum? And then you're rewarded with that episode. That must have been so fun for you.
Well, and reward is the perfect word because, again, I'm totally in the dark. Like, we started Freak Show, and all I know is, you know, I'm Pepper because I can't play a different Pinhead. Like, I mean, I'm versatile, but geez, how many Pinheads do you have in your wheelhouse?
I know.
So I, you know, I was basically just doing her, and you know, I mean, I had to obviously channel a Pepper from 10 years earlier, so maybe I'm a little spryer, a little lighter, but I mean, I'm technically the same character. But then I think I had 12 hours notice before we started shooting that particular episode, the you know, epic orphans.
Do you think that's that's better for an actor, or is that
not
just
knowing
the way— or is that just the way TV works? Is you just don't
know? I think
know?
That's just the way TV works.
I mean, because, you know, when you're doing a play, you know, like if you're, say you're doing a regional theater, you know, you get 6 weeks with your castmates and your director and your, you know, and here you get 12 hours.
I mean, I don't love it, but hey, love it or leave it. And I'm not leaving it.
Yeah,
so
fair enough.
Like, for example, I didn't know that Salty was my husband until I read that episode. And, you know, here I've been working with him for the last 10 episodes you know, without even realizing actually who he was to me. But fortunately, they did not, the writers did not throw me under a bus. You know, they justified our sort of sexless relationship by with a line, you know. Their love transcended sex. And so it was okay. But, you know, again, had I been told off the top that he was my husband, I probably would have played the entire season differently.
That's so fascinating. That's so Did you know that, did you find out later that Ma Petite was like you're supposed to be your baby? You didn't know any of that?
I didn't know any of that.
That's so fascinating. That's absolutely fascinating. What was your favorite part of the episode where it's Pepper with her sister and her horrible brother-in-law and baby? What was your, as a, not as an actor, what is your favorite part as the story, you know?
Oh.
For Pepper's story.
Gosh. I think probably Jessica leaving her, you know, Elsa Mars leaving her at the sister's house. It's just so heartbreaking.
It was painful. It was painful to watch.
Yeah.
It was really, really sad.
Well, and even just as an actress, I was, that was so loaded for me because not only was I saying goodbye to, you know, Pepper was saying goodbye to Elsa, Naomi was saying goodbye to Jessica, you know, I mean, she's, had already announced that she wouldn't be back. For all I know, you know, I wasn't sure if I'd be back either. You know, I was saying goodbye to this show, to this dream job, to this clique of friends, to this, you know, city of New Orleans. I mean, it was, it was a tearful goodbye in every way.
Oh, I can't imagine. What, this clique of friends you're talking about. So you guys, since it's an anthology series and you're this core group of actors is coming back for four seasons and you got to do two of them. Are you guys super close? Everyone get super close?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we're a motley crew. you know, I don't know if you got to see us there at Dragon Con, but we're...
No, I didn't.
You know, we're pretty... we draw a crowd. You know, we've got the 6 foot eight, transgender giant. We've got Matt Fraser, flippers for hands, and you know, a little Ma Petite, 2 foot tall, 13
pounds. Was that whole group at Dragon Con?
Actually, Ma Petite was not.
Okay.
But yes, the rest of them were. You know, Rose Siggins, she's you know, basically a torso on a skateboard. By the way, I invited all of them to Five Truths and a Lie. They did not come. I'm not gonna say I wasn't a little relieved when they didn't. And I was also quite relieved to notice that the handicap section at the very front was completely empty. But I was
I hope we're dropping lots of hints for you to listen to this podcast when it comes out.
Except if you're handicapped. Like,
don't listen to it. You don't want to hear it.
No, but yeah, I mean, it's a... It's interesting because they can't go anywhere without being recognized. And So, you know, it's funny. We'd be out with, say, Emma Roberts and Evan Peters and Kathy Bates, and, you know, very recognizable faces. And yet folks' eyes go straight to the man with flippers. You know, they bypass Kathy Bates. And they, you know.
They can't stop staring.
Yeah.
How does he handle that? Or is, I guess he's been living
his whole life. So he doesn't know anything otherwise.
What's the, I don't know if you can answer these questions, but I can ask you anyway. Is there something about Kathy Bates that I'd be surprised to know?
She's not scary at all.
No misery.
Yeah. No, she is pure love. She's so supportive and she's wonderful.
And she talk about a theater person. She's like a gigantic theater person. Yeah. What's something about Jessica Lange we wouldn't know?
Ooh, you know, she's so mysterious.
Is she mysterious?
Yeah, and I don't think that's fantastic. Something you don't know about her. But
yeah, no. She does those kind of roles so well, right? You know, where you just don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And what about James Cromwell? Well, I guess what you said, you know, the giving.
So giving, my God.
Yeah, that's
fair. Yeah.
What, if you had a choice, I think I know what you're going to say, between doing live theater the rest of your life or doing television and film, what would you choose?
I mean, again, we go back.
If they all pay the same.
It's not about money for me at all. But again, we go back to the the initial goal, have eyes on me.
Yeah.
And let's face it, AHS, I got, you know, 5 million, well, 10 million when you count both eyes, on me.
Use 10 million
in a night, you know, as opposed to in Edinburgh, which was so fulfilling creatively. Yeah. And yet, you know, the most I could get was 300.
Yeah.
You know, however many eyes I could fit in those seats. So, and I mean, I work my butt off for every eye.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably why, honestly, like, I'm prouder of my solo work than anything I've ever done, because it's all me, you know.
Right.
And I paid for that with my Spanish teaching money.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I will never have FX's budget.
That's a very good point.
I choose television, certainly.
Yeah.
But the process, I mean, yeah, I like to know if I'm married to somebody with a little advance. But, you know, it is what it is.
Do you have any aspirations right now to do another solo show?
I would love to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's now, you know, you got to have something to say.
Yeah.
And I've also, you know, I've got kind of big footprints to fill here now. So I don't want to make any kind of lateral moves.
Of course. But in your future, at some point, you see another solo show.
Of course. For sure. Yes, absolutely.
What was the biggest difference? I think I'm going to go back just a second here. What was the biggest difference for you between shooting season 2 and season 4? Besides location and all that kind of stuff. Was there more confidence?
I mean, I think, you know, I felt like I was at the big kids table. Like I had a permanent seat as opposed to this little satellite chair.
Yeah, where you were thinking you're a glorified extra.
Right.
You know, which you didn't know till
later. Yeah, no, I mean, I was definitely in the click by season 4.
That's great. Okay. Here's something I brings back to Dragon Con and those 32 cons that you've done this year. Have you gotten a lot? Because my friend Kelly Holden, did an episode of Fargo. Uh-huh. I don't know if you watched season 1 of Fargo. She was Martin Freeman's wife in the very beginning. And she started getting incredible fan art sent to her.
Oh, yeah.
How often and how much have you gotten?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like I have to move. I can't, like, I'm bursting at the seams.
You've got too much.
Yeah. Art. In fact, and that might be my next solo show. It might not even be performance at all. I might just have to host some sort of like art opening. Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I was even thinking of like putting out a book, like an art pepper art book.
I think that's a great idea.
Oh, I mean,
it's just amazing because there's so many talented people out there, and with the internet and everything, they can get it to you. Like Kelly's best story is like they took some girl on Tumblr, took everyone from the cast of Fargo and put them through a Harry Potter sorting hat to what school they would go. That takes a lot of work.
It does. But I mean, I'm overwhelmed by the amount of creativity that fans have.
Do people bring you things for at the cons?
Oh, yeah.
Cons? Yeah?
Every week, I have a new edition.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing.
And they put, you know, they put time into that. Yes. So how wonderful for you.
I don't have anything like that. There's nothing I watch on television that I'm like, I'm going to paint that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. I love it, you know.
Back to television. Yes. I'm just going to want to touch on an email exchange that we had this week before you came over, which made me laugh because I saw you at the Emmys. I was watching part of the red carpet, and I thought your dress was fantastic. I was like, man, Naomi looks like hot. She looks fantastic. What a great dress. And I let you know, and you said that you were on one of the worst dress lists.
Yeah, which, again, I'm the architect's daughter who, you know, my dad was this, like, very, contemporary architect doing, you know, really avant-garde stuff. And this was my, you know, nod to that. Like that,
that is my
aesthetic.
That's why I love the dress so much.
Yeah.
Because there was, I don't know, but yet it was very simplistic.
Yes.
It wasn't like too much. It was clean, which being an architect's daughter, you know, clean. It was very clean and I loved it.
Well, and I wasn't nominated personally. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think if you're going to go as a fairy princess, then you know.
Yeah.
You're going on stage. And not that I'm a fairy. I wouldn't probably dress as a fairy princess anyway. But no, that dress was very me.
Yeah.
And I stand by it. I love that dress.
Oh, you should. You rocked it. I loved it.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic. And like you said in your email, it's just like, yeah, but I'm on a list, you know.
That means something.
People took notice.
Well, I will say a lot of the folks that I interviewed with there on the carpet actually said, well, you dressed appropriately, which I think is actually because it was 98 degrees on that carpet.
Oh, because that one, yes.
So as far as I'm concerned, anyone with long sleeves or all black or big
and thick, how hot was it?
96, according to LA Times. I also heard 98.
Wow.
Then. I mean, it was freakishly hot.
Were people just dripping?
Dripping. In fact, I had like just a line of sweat down my front. Oh. And my publicist was like holding it away and fanning.
trying to get it to dry.
Oh, it's disgusting.
So where do you go about getting dresses as an actor going to these red carpet events?
Showroom.
You go to showrooms.
Stylist.
Yes. That must be so fun.
It is so fun.
What was
fun.
Your experience with your first showroom and stylist?
Actually, it's kind of funny. The I had a stylist bring a bunch of dresses from showroom over for the Oscars.
Uh-huh.
And the dress that I fell in love with, the next day, the day of the Oscars, I know I put things off to last minute. the next day, when I'm supposed to be getting dressed, he comes to me with, "So sorry, that dress is actually no longer available. They sent it to Lady Gaga." They needed to bring her a bunch of stuff for, after parties and whatnot. And of course, I was just irate. Like, what? You know, that's my dress.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? So, you know, they threw me in something else that was fine. But it was
Well, they think you have the same aesthetic as Lady Gaga.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah.
There's that. That's pretty good.
But, you know, cut to 6 months later, I'm at the Emmys with Lady Gaga, and she's like, you know, there's hundreds of paparazzi.
Oh, that's right, because she's in the new season.
Yes, she's in the new season. I don't know if you caught the picture. It's in this week's Variety of her actually kissing me on the cheek.
Cool.
Which again, it was just funny because I didn't know that I would have a chance to give her shit about stealing my dress at the Oscars, at the Emmys. Not that I did. I kept thinking.
Well, you
cordial.
Could have, of course.
I could have.
Have you been starstruck by anybody when you've met them, like at these events?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the nice thing is that I'm up there like for the same reason they are.
Yeah.
You know, so if anything, like I could have felt that way about Scott Thompson.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but let's
yeah.
face it, we're equals.
Yeah.
Under, you know, in my mind, no. Like in my mind, he's like a deity.
Right.
And I'm a, you know, peon. But, you know, at the same time, we're both there to tell a story. We both got 6 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that helps me kind of
Right.
Keep it together.
Right. That makes sense. How, we're running out of time here, but I wanted to know what your mom and dad think of your career. Aww. Coming from such a creative family.
Right.
How are they with everything?
I think especially my mom is not surprised at all.
She's like, oh, it's perfect for Naomi.
Yeah, I mean, I think they knew this from, I made it very clear from, you know, when I was in Kids Kits that I was going to be doing this.
Right, right.
And so there's never been a moment, like they're not surprised at all about anything. At the same time, you know, my dad is a little girl and there's some things that I've done that he's, you know, I did a little YouTube parody of a Madonna that he thought was porn. And of course, I don't know how to say to my dad, like, you need to watch more porn. he didn't approve of the BJ scene in my one woman show. But of course, I had to remind him it's a coming of age story.
Yeah.
You know, how many girls turn 17, 18 and don't like at least acknowledge the existence of the opposite sex. Like,
right.
it's part of that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think.
Does he tell you that or do you hear it from your mother?
Oh, he tells me that.
Okay.
I think I used the F word once in an interview. And even then, I didn't even say it. Uh-huh. I said F.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was effing with me kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I got a very stern email. I'm going to get one again after this. But I'm also going to get...
He's probably gonna not like the me because I think I said the F word five times.
Yeah. All my Spanish students.
All the people we went to high school with.
Everybody from high school. Yeah. Yeah. So this is the beginning. But no, he was very upset that, you know, we've taught you to, you know... speak well, evidently not very well, but they did teach it to me.
You can make a sentence.
Yeah, I can.
You can make a sentence.
It's contagious, damn you. And it's true, but I tried to explain to him, you know, Dad, I'm not trying to be a speaker. Like, yeah. I'm not Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Like, I'm actually a comedian. Yeah. So when I say F, it's because it trips off the tongue better than, you know, fornicate or whatever.
Yeah.
The fancy word you taught me.
The piece you're doing, you know, of course.
So yes, it's deliberate. I meant to say it. It's not because I don't have a vocabulary.
Do they like American Horror Story?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think they'll watch without you in it? They'll watch next season?
You know, I mean, my mom did not like Coven. She's been very vocal about that.
Yeah.
I'm sure had I been in it, she would have felt differently. I think so. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great that you have your support. Yeah. Do you go back home?
And especially given that where they've come from, you know, right. You remember television rotted the brain. And, you know, the only television we ever watched was Cosmos with Carl Sagan and Sunday Morning with Charles Carroll. And so now that they are able to expand and actually watch television on Wednesday night.
So... Is this the only show they watch then? Do they still not watch television? Or have they come around, say, in the last decade or so and they watch more TV?
I mean, now that my dad's retired and, you know, has little else to do, I think probably television
they probably watch
enters
a little
in.
More
yeah.
TV.
But, no, I'm pretty sure this is pretty much it as far as my mom's concerned. You know, she's now the president of all her clubs. You know,
of course she is.
She's president of Opera Club and the dance comes.
Like mother, like daughter.
Yeah, no, she's actually following in my footsteps.
Oh, that's sweet.
It is.
That's a really nice thing to say.
Yeah.
So where can everybody find you on the social medias?
Ooh, Naomi W. Grossman is my Twitter handle. It's verified, so you know it's me.
Mm-hmm. And a blue check.
Yep. Pretty sure that goes for Facebook and Instagram as well.
Excellent. And do you have anything coming up right now?
I'm going to be working on a ZomCom.
Oh, cool.
Shortly, yeah. That'll be fun. I just finished a horror film called Fear, Inc.
Excellent.
And I did another horror film earlier in the year called The Chair. So some stuff coming out.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Naomi, for coming by.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'm doing Kneel Before Odd. Thanks for kneeling the whole time.
Oh,
I appreciate it.
I have my knees already.
I know. It's just a thing you have to do here. I've got some ice. You get your own Kneel Before Odd branded ice pack before you leave.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Supplicants, you may now rise. The merciful Odd has chosen to spare you. Please exit the internet to your left.